This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of, and we dream such frightening things. Sci-fi and Scream.
Be afraid.
Be very afraid on Joy 94.9. Welcome to Sci-fi and Scream here on Joy 94.9. It is the 31st of December 2009, but I'm sure everybody knows that. Tonight we're going to be looking back and saying a fond farewell to 2009, but we're also going to be looking at the decade, an adieu to the decade, goodbye to the noughties. And tonight it is just myself, the screamer of Sci-Fi and Scream. That's me, Sonia, keeping the banner flying while my co-presenter is away. Fantastic. And I've also got a guest here tonight, Ross. Ross has kindly stepped in as a sci-fi and horror expert to help me out this evening.
Hi.
Say hi.
Hi, everyone.
Great. And I'd just like to say thanks to Nick and his co-friends there with the frequency, and a happy new year to you, Nick. So tonight we'll be looking at the year that was, 2009, the decade that was, sci-fi and horror news updates from around the galaxy. And my guest Ross will explain himself and his choice, and his choices, I should say, from his best of list. We also have the usual assortment of music from the soundtracks that were and are our lives. And that first little track I played was from the House of Wax soundtrack. It came out in 2005. It was a remake of a Vincent Price Hammer film from the Hammer Horror House of Horrors. And that was Marilyn Manson with Dried Up, Tied Up, Dead to the World. Ross knows a bit about House of Wax.
Basically, the House of Wax is a remake of a really, really clever horror movie made some years ago, and it was filmed in a really good format of 3D, which was pretty new to the time, and it wasn't using the red and blue system that The Creature from the Black Lagoon was filmed in. But however, the 2005 version was noted as the film in which you could see Paris Hilton die, and most people found that the most enjoyable part of the film.
Really?
Yep.
Why do you think that is? We love Paris.
You get to see her basically take a harpoon to the head, and I think a lot of people have basically fantasised that for a long time.
Really?
Yeah. I think a part of Australian culture is not really liking people that are too successful and that are born into money like Paris is, and, you know, we just don't like her.
Excellent.
Hence, harpoon to the head.
Harpoon to the head.
Good times.
Good times were had, obviously. But I've seen the original many, many moons ago. I think it was on late one night, mm-hmm. You know, like maybe at 1 a.m. yeah. With Vincent Price. Wasn't he great?
You know, back in the day, I saw it in 3D at the Valhalla, and that was really special. Yeah, that was back in the early 90s.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah.
So you've got a list, but we're not going to go into that yet.
No, not just yet. First, no. We're going to go into your usual...
Yeah, rantings and so forth. And play some music, of course. But I've also got a list that was kindly put forward or emailed to me from Kaz, my co-presenter and co-producer. And it's her top tens. And she's got a fantastic list, I must say. It's pretty in-depth, varied, and very broad indeed. So I'm pretty excited about reading her list. Because I think everybody has a different way of putting a list together. And, I mean, your list will probably be quite different the way you've put it together, Ross.
Yeah, I think so.
And mine is definitely...
Yep. We'll have different tastes.
Strange as well. We do, don't worry.
Yeah.
I know it's New Year's Eve, and I know most people are probably out having a good time. But we're going to try and encourage those who aren't going out to maybe stay up at least till 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And longer.
And I say embrace your being socially backward. We're going to enjoy the last part hour of 2009 as much as we can.
You don't mean that.
I mean it with a lot of love.
A lot of love was spared, wasn't it?
I myself am one of them. This is my social event of the year. Being here in a hot studio with Sonia Suter.
It's very steamy in here, isn't it? It's like a sauna.
It is hot. But
you're hot. You're just not my type. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm like a fever nobody wants.
Oh, right. You're listening to Joy, a 94.9. We'll play a bit of Wendy Carlos's Clockwork Orange. Oh, I know that's not the, you know, the noughties.
One of my favourites.
2009.
Love that Moog sound.
But it is awesome, and I thought we'd just have a little background music for that. Oh, listen to that. While I read out Kaz's list of goodies here. Okay, so she's got as her top 10 sci-fi films for 2000 to 2009 as... Now, I'm not sure if these are in any particular order as such, but she's got as her number one, Children of Men. Great film, that one. Serenity, the Joss Whedon film, which later became Firefly, the series, the TV series. I don't know, you ever see that?
I haven't seen either of those first two ones, Sonia.
Okay.
Yep. Can you tell me a little bit more about them?
Maybe later.
Yeah, okay.
I, Robot. Remember, this isn't my list.
Okay.
Okay. District 9, she's got that as number 4.
Kudos for that.
Number 5, she's got Moon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Duncan Jones film.
No, but...
Yeah. Donnie Darko at number 6.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But you said something earlier about Donnie Darko.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider it science fiction myself. I'm not quite sure how I'd categorise that film, but yeah, I definitely did consider it for my list.
Yeah. So number 7, she's got Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Another one in the same category, yes.
Yeah. Number 8, Star Trek, the latest film. No.
Haven't seen that one, but I have heard many good things about it, yeah.
Oh, good. Pitch Black, that had Vin Diesel. You seen that one?
Only snippets.
In the dark. And Minority Report. Mainly for the visual effects she's got here in brackets.
Yeah, I'd agree that film's got a few good things to offer, not just the special effects. I mean, there's some interesting stuff happening in that film.
Excellent. And she's got in her top 10 horror monster films, horror /monster. That's interesting. She's got number 1, 28 Days Later, and 28 Weeks Later on the same billing.
All right.
She's got Let the Right One In.
Okay, and that's there's a remake of that coming out soon, isn't there?
Yeah, well, a copy, basically, an American copy.
Called Let Me In. Okay, so a watered down one for the masses. Okay.
Yes.
They do that.
And The Orphanage, she's got that number 3.
Another one I haven't seen. Can I continue?
That was produced by Guillermo del Toro. He didn't direct it, but I'll talk about that later. She's got American Psycho, Gus Van Sant's version.
What year was that made?
No, that's wrong. I'm thinking of Psycho.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Don't ask me the year. This is not my list.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Remember.
So Psycho the remake. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
No, American Psycho.
Right.
I think that came out in 97, actually. But I'll have to look that up. Maybe we can look that up later.
Yeah.
She's got at number 5, Ginger Snaps. I've never seen those. But I know that they're very popular.
I think that's a werewolf movie. Yeah.
I have no idea.
Okay. Canadian. Right.
Dog Soldiers.
I haven't seen it, but...
The Host. That's an excellent one.
Yeah.
I think that's South Korean.
Okay.
Monsters, yeah.
All right.
A great big...
I like the sound of that.
Running lizard thing.
Uh-huh.
Like Godzilla. Brotherhood of the Wolf. French. Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. Musical. Tim Burton's musical. Dreamcatcher. That was interesting. Love the animals. And that one. And her top 10 fantasy cult films, or comic book films, interpretation of comics, I guess, 2009 is the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Can't pick one. She can't pick one. It's hard because only one will rule overall. Isn't that right? X-Men number 2. V for Vendetta number 3. Iron Man, the first one, number 4. Pan's Labyrinth, she's got at number 5. She's got 300 at number 6. And number 7, she's got Sin City. 8, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Transformers, number 9. And Hellboy. I forgot about Hellboy. That's Guillermo del Toro. So, yeah, that's just the start of her list. But what I might do is we might just take a little break for a little bit. And I'll play some more music in a second.
Sounds good.
And Ross is going to talk about his list shortly.
Yes, I'm going to be defending my choices as usual.
But he's also got something special about District 9 coming up. I can't wait to hear that, because I've got some stuff about District 9 too.
Oh, that'll be good.
Because for 2009, it had to be District 9, personally.
Yeah, I agree.
In space, no one can hear you scream. On Joy 94.9, it's a different story. Sci-fi and Squeam, Thursday nights, 11 to 1, on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back. Yes, Sci-fi and Squeam, that was Kaz's voice, who cannot be with us tonight, nor can Albert, who is usually supports us with panelling and programming and stuff. Ross, I'm going to read out some sci-fi news for tonight, actually. So it's fairly recent news. It's the most recent I could get from what's online and what's available. So I guess I'll be doing that. And how are you finding the heat in the studio, Ross?
It is pretty warm. Yeah.
It's a warmy. It's a warmy tonight, isn't it? Oh, yeah. It's a warm one.
Well, that was nice to get some rain. It was.
We got caught in the rain, everybody, and it was a spiritual moment, even though we're not spiritual people. Not really. What did Ross do?
I danced a little in the rain, yeah.
He didn't sing in the rain, but he did a bit of dancing, didn't you?
Yeah.
You cheeky monkey.
He did a bit of complaining, which is not all the way I expected.
Oh, there goes the level.
Yeah. Oops. When it goes into the red, that means bad. Yeah,
that means kittens are dying somewhere.
Sorry, everyone.
Sorry about that. All right. So what I'll do is carry on, because that's what we do here. Oh, carry on.
Let's carry on together.
Okay. Wendy Carlos in the background as I read out the new. Here we go. I'll read out the news now.
News.
Reported in the heraldsun.com.au, the Australian ban on sci-fi video game Aliens vs Predator has been overturned by the Classification Review Board. The game was initially banned due to graphic gore, but the board has given it an MA 15 plus rating, with the warning strong science fiction violence is contained within. There we go. The board explained in a statement that the violent scenes, originally deemed too graphic for Australia due to the lack of an R rating for games, can be allowed at an MA 15 plus level, as they are not, and this is a quote, are not prolonged and are interspersed with longer non-violent sequences. Would you play that game?
Yeah, I think I would. Yeah.
You would?
I think the youth of today are very capable of separating fantasy from reality.
I have trouble, though. But I'm a different generation. But we won't go into that. So apparently the more contentious violence is randomly generated and is not dependent on player selection of any specific moves. Earlier this month, the game's UK developer had refused to modify the game after the initial Australian ban. So there you go. That's that news, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In SFF Media Report Online, now that his science fiction visual feast, Avatar, has been released, director James Cameron is already discussing how he plans to continue the story. So, spoilers. Spoilers follow, so beware. What comes next on the world of Pandora? Will the human race try once more to invade and mine the planet? How will Jake Sully adapt now that his consciousness has been transferred into a native? Can Cameron come up with a story that isn't a weak cliche like the original? This isn't me saying this. This is actually from SFF, Media Report Online.
Mm-hmm.
Recent reports from Variety suggest that Avatar is on track to become a sizable blockbuster, with the film having made US$242 million worldwide already. So I doubt he'll have any trouble financing a sequel. What do you think, Ross?
Yeah, I don't think he'll have any trouble whatsoever. I mean, the movie's really only just begun. Mm. I think he's going to probably make $1 billion with this one.
$1 billion, yes. Cameron spoke to MTV about where he wants to take Jake Sully, played by Sam Worthington, his Na'vi partner, Neytiri, played by Zoe Saldana, who was in Star Trek, the movie, earlier this year.
Oh.
Yes. And the planet Pandora, next, played by the planet Pandora, I suppose. apparently, according to Cameron, we'll follow Jake and Terry. And I have a, he said, I have a trilogy scaled arc of story right now, but I haven't really put any serious work into writing a script. He also revealed that because he has already developed the technology, the next films are likely to be a lot easier and smooth sailing.
Yep.
I suppose now he's got what he wants and it works.
Yep.
I suppose he doesn't really have to...
He's got the wares, he's just got to put a good story together.
Yeah, hopefully a better story, personally.
Yeah.
Like it was very cliche.
Yeah.
Noble Savage, you know, environmentalism. We've all done that, haven't we? We've all spiked ourselves to trees once or twice and we've thought about recycled toilet paper, haven't we?
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't flush away very well.
Maybe in the same vein, but not on the same scale.
Definitely not. But it can be quite 3D, can't it?
The story might be a bit cliched and a bit weak, but yeah. I think it was executed really well.
Yeah, it was a amazing looking...
It made me get a little teary in parts, which, you know, I wasn't expecting, you know.
Okay, and as far as the genre of horror and sci-fi, we've got some releases, new releases coming up. In January 15th, not here unfortunately people, but in the US, January the 15th, 2010, we've got Cloverfield's Matt Reeves, who's adapted Thomas Alfredson's cult Swedish hit Let the Right One In, being released. And this is a remake for the Overture Hammer Films production. The horror pick, based on author John Ajvid Lindvisk's novel, concerns a bullied 12-year-old boy whose friendship with a new female neighbour coincides with a series of bloody murders in their small town. And that was from Jeremy Wheeler from the Sci-Fi All Movie Guide online. So I don't know when that will be released here, but hopefully pretty soon. And from Sci-Fi Squad online, Vincenzo Natali, who directed Cube, episodes of Earth, Final Conflict, and interestingly enough, a segment in A Paris Je T'aime, brings Splice to the Sundance Film Festival coming up. Splice is about a new animal species, ambitious young scientists, engineer, making them celebrity scientists. Apparently they introduce human DNA into their experiment. And the cast includes Adrian Brody, Sarah Polley, Daphne Chaniak, David Hewlett, and Vincenzo Natali wrote the screenplay as well. Other new movies coming up in 2010. Online Bloody Disgusting says, at its core, Bitch Slap follows three bad girls, a down-and-out stripper, a drug-running killer, and a corporate power broker, as they arrive at a remote desert hideaway to extort and steal $200 million in diamonds from a ruthless underworld kingpin. Things quickly spin out of control as allegiances change, truths are revealed, other criminals arrive for the score, the fate of the world hangs in the balance, and they are forced to confront a villain much worse than they've ever confronted before. It's the ultimate morality tale, one by one, as they realise the whole shebang was a setup and one of them may not even be human. And apparently that's going to be released in January 2010, and that's director Rick Jacobson. Wow. So that's just some of the news coming up and some of the films that will be released here in Australia and the US and the UK. But when I say January 2010, this is taken from a UK site, so they're obviously meaning in Great Britain, not here. Sorry, guys, we might have to wait a little bit longer. And unfortunately, sometimes we have to wait a year before some of these films reach our shores, our cinemas. Yeah, so that was... a little bit more from Clockwork Orange. Up next, I'm going to play something from True Blood. I know that's not a film, but it was a big hit this year in television. It really broke the mold, unless you had free-to-air. Otherwise, you had trouble seeing it. Have you seen it, Ross?
No,
the series?
Sorry.
Not at all?
I've only got free-to-air, unfortunately.
Only got air to breathe.
It seems really popular. What is it that you think attracts people to this show?
Sex.
Right.
Yeah, there's lots of sex. Interspecies sex between vampires and humans that aren't, you know, immortal bloodsuckers. And it's got hunky Scandinavian actors. And it's got, you know, the lovely Anna Paquin. Little Anna.
She is exquisite.
She's done well. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream with Sonia and Ross on Joy 94.9. Welcome back to, who are we again? Sci-Fi and Scream?
That's right, Sci-Fi Ross. And Scream with Ross Bryant and Sonia Suter.
Cool. Thanks, Ross. Excellent. That's great. That was, what were we listening to before that? We were listening to the True Blood soundtrack with Jace Everett. Bad Things. I love that. I love that series. It's so spooky. There's like evangelistic people going crazy, and there's vampires, and there's all sorts of interspecies sex. It's lovely. Now, Ross has got his top 100?
10.
Just 10. All right, cool. Take it away, Ross. What have you got for
us? As Sonia was saying, I've compiled a list of my top 10, and that is favourite sci-fi slash horror films over the last 10 years. Cool. So from 2000 to 2009.
Have you put them in any order? Well, you know, it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to go, this is my favourite, this isn't.
It is hard to put them in a proper order. I've just basically put them in order of preference. But I've noticed that unlike Kaz's list, mine is pretty mainstream, mostly.
I don't know. You'd be surprised.
Yeah. Okay.
Mainstream to some people is not mainstream to others.
Yeah, indeed, others.
Love it. All right.
At the top of my list at number one, I have District 9 of 2009, directed by Neil Blomkamp, written by Neil Blomkamp and Terry Tatchell, produced by Peter Jackson.
Ooh, we know about him, don't we? Cool.
I really thought this was one of the most original science fiction films that I've seen in a long time. I found it to be a very allegorical film depicting refugee aliens trapped in Johannesburg that are being urged to relocate in an even worse part of South Africa. It was told in a mostly documentary style, with the protagonist going on a journey that forces him to basically, in the end, identify with the alien prawns, whereas at the start he was really...
So why are they called prawns? I mean, if someone hasn't seen the film...
Yeah.
And I'm sure 99.9% of our listeners would have seen this film. But if you haven't, we're going to spoil the story for you. But that's cool.
Well, I'm going to try not to spoil
No, you don't. Go for it.
Okay. Well, basically, they're
just
called...
Just a warning.
They're called prawns for a couple of reasons. One is it's a derogatory term referring to them as bottom feeders, because they arrived in Johannesburg basically suffering from malnutrition and just basically eat whatever they can get. And they're living in appalling conditions in slums.
Cat food, isn't that
and
right?
That's right,
isn't
yeah.
It's a bizarre thing about cat food, which is quite amusing.
In another parallel, they're sort of given... they're sort of addicted, like cats out of catnip, to tins of really cheap cat food. And it's basically... And you can see the depictions of the prawns basically bartering with, you know, the gang lords to give them their stuff now and they can pay them later. So basically buying cat food on tick, if that makes any sense. Yeah, basically it's a film that's surprisingly moving and grueling in parts, putting very deliberate and relevant parallels to life in our time. Second on my list is Land of the Dead from 2005, which is the most recent... zombie film from the director George A. Romero, produced by Mark Canton, written by George A. Romero, and starring Australian Simon Baker.
I don't even remember him in that.
Yeah, well, he wasn't the star, but he was a star.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, also starring John Leguizamo and Dennis Hopper.
I love John Leguizamo. Yep.
And, yeah, he's very versatile as an actor, really. Mm. And also Asia Argento, Dario Argento's and Dario Nicolodi's daughter.
She's a character.
She's sublime in this film. And
sublime.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, one of the most interesting parts of this movie is seeing Asia Argento, who plays a really streetwise kind of, you know...
Lady.
Young lady who looks like she might, you know, be a lady of the night, but, you know, just has that sort of punk quality. She's basically locked in a cage with the zombies and sort of has to fight them, and it's basically like a spectator sport. But she's rough, she's mean, and she doesn't take none of their crap.
She takes no prisoners.
Yeah, and she comes out unscathed. And Dennis Hopper has a really, really good line. This is another movie that has parallels. Basically, the greedy, nasty people in the movie...
Oh, dear.
Basically, they're the American government. And
it's kind of anti-establishment, would you say?
Yeah, and there are people that basically... from what I can remember is correct, are basically lobbying for zombie rights, and these people form one sort of team, I guess, and the other team, the baddies, refer to the other team as terrorists, and basically in the context, which I'm completely ruining here, Dennis Hopper says, we don't negotiate with terrorists. It was just...
God, really George Bush said that, didn't he?
That's right, yeah.
During the first Iraq, well, no, second Iraq issue.
Yeah, it was just
We don't want to get too political.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we don't. Because my lack of knowledge will become really apparent. But one interesting note about this film was banned in Ukraine because of the cannibalism theme, which just hits a bit of a raw nerve.
Because they're...
Sometimes people had to resort to cannibalism in Ukraine to survive because of the appalling conditions and the cruel winters. Yeah, so basically because of that theme, it was banned. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Whew, that puts quite a... Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, yeah. And a lot of these films, you know, the things that they have to say about the way that things are in the world it's really interesting. It just gives them a lot of field to play with things like that, although that one's...
And what have you got next on your list?
Next on my list is... Jeepers Creepers 2, which is 2003. That's right.
I liked the first one. I almost completely forgot about the first one. But I liked
the first one too. But I'd found the second one to be just a lot better, you know, a lot more memorable. It did a lot of interesting things. Something which I think is really fascinating. They don't explore the background of the main horror character too much. It's just, there's a lot of mystery.
There's going to be Jeepers Creepers 3,
believe. It's called Cathedral. I'm really excited about this. I just found out about it the other day and I'm just chuffed, really.
It's pretty, they are really good special effects. And it's quite funny. I didn't laugh at the first one.
Yeah.
But the second one, I found myself laughing, thinking this is a little bit comedic.
Yeah, that was a bit funny. Yeah, it was having a bit of fun with the genre, but I think it does take some interesting turns.
And what have you got next?
I have to mention Ray Wise is in this film, and he was the actor from Twin Peaks who played the father.
He is a star, isn't he? In science fiction,
he's done some really good stuff, and he's a very attractive man. I feel has to be said.
All right, but moving along,
she doesn't like that.
That's okay. I saw him on some program recently, and he'd spent way too much time in the suntan clinic, but that's okay.
Yeah, slips up and slap people. Okay, moving on. Number four, Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines. I didn't include Terminator Salvation because I like Terminator 3 because of
I do like that one best.
It just gives me I really enjoy the theme of doom, the theme of technology taking over and it already being there before we even anticipate it. I just find that really threatening, ominous atmosphere to the film really effective. Yeah, something that I remember quite fondly of that movie, and that's why it's mentioned here. Basically the film does really well. Basically, it lacks the James Cameron and the Linda Hamilton element, which, you know, is hard to do, but it still has something special to offer, I feel.
Where are we up to? What number are we up to now?
We're up to number five. Whew. And this next one is a horror, of course. This is... a 2007 film called Mother of Tears, directed by Dario Argento.
Ah, yes.
And starring his daughter, Asia Argento, who we just mentioned is in Land of the Dead. This movie is referred to some as a turkey, and it's... I don't personally feel that it's a turkey. I think it's basically a really interesting horror film. It's definitely got a few good things to offer. Let's see, it's produced by Dario Argento, Mariana Berlusconi and Guilla Maglietta, written by Dario Argento, Walter Fasano, Adam Girash, Simona Simonetti, starring Asia Argento and her real-life mother, I think, Dario Nicolodi. basically, this film is part of a trilogy, the first one being Suspiria, the second one being Inferno from 1980, which didn't receive a mainstream release.
I think it only went to video and then DVD. I've never seen it playing in cinemas here.
It's difficult to find. It just wasn't appreciated by the American distributors, so it was kind of a, you know, backdoor sleeper hit, if such a term exists.
BSH. You have coined a phrase, and only on here on Sci-Fi and Scream, such things can happen.
Basically, this movie, Mother of Tears, is notable because it just sees a return of some really incredibly gruesome and vicious murder scenes that are really enjoyable to watch, as disturbing as they are. And basically, just that's something that I think Dario Argento has brought to horror, a really intense, visceral, abattoir-feeling horror theme. He just does like nobody else. So that's the first half of my top 10 list.
Okay.
So, yep.
Well, maybe we'll just take a break, give you a little bit of a R&R moment, and I'm going to play something for you now.
Oh, thanks.
From Mulholland Drive. Yeah. And you have to guess the bit, but we can talk about that after we have a little break. You're listening to the wonderful Ross and Sonia.
And the lesser Sonia.
Who's here. Welcome back. That was from the Mulholland soundtrack, Mulholland Drive soundtrack, and it was Silencio. You loved that film.
I certainly did. It's something, a film that I relate to very closely. It just reminds me of a really interesting, really special time in my life. Basically just love that movie, yeah. Love the acting in it, love the atmosphere, the scenery, the music, especially the music.
And you have an interesting take on it, don't you?
Yeah, I have a few different theories about Mulholland Drive, and I've done a bit of research on this. A lot of people have different views about this film. Basically, I think that there's a possibility that some of it is based on, obviously, an alternate reality that is dreamed, but it's kind of hard to discern which part is a dream and which is reality. Another angle to look at is that the main character has multiple personalities, and a lot of the characters in the film are actually kind of her personalities that she's created in response to some trauma early in life, which is suggested pretty obviously in the Silencio scene in the theatre when she's basically rocking back and forth in a seat like she's being attacked by someone quite heavy. If you look closely, and then you can hear, if you pay attention, a kind of grunt from the man that's on the stage. Yeah, it's interesting stuff, and it can kind of drive you a bit crazy, but there's a lot going on in that film, and I think probably the point is not to really be sure.
Good. Right. Well, interesting take on a film. I loved it too, but for obviously different reasons. Quite different reasons.
Can you tell me what they are?
The female leads.
That's actually a very good point.
Good. Now, what I'm going to do now is just read out some of the sci-fi news for the decade. Actually, just some stuff that I've managed to throw together at the last minute kind of thing. And the first one I've got here, because it's actually not in any actual order as such, but we've got Joss Whedon gets outfoxed twice. After Buffy the Vampire Slayer creator Joss Whedon got burned by Fox's burying and then cancellation of his beloved space cowboy series Firefly, many thought he had learned his lesson. They were wrong, because he entered into the unholy union once again with Dollhouse, a show with such promise that it's already in its death throes. And that's from a report on Geek Out Nerdvana online. Interesting site, that is. Superman returns and flops. They put a lot of money into that and it didn't work out. Lord of the Rings makes it to the big screen. That all happened in the decade that we've just had, which is amazing, you know, the decade we've had. Battlestar Galactica returns and makes sci-fi cool. Everyone had their doubts about a remake of Battlestar Galactica, a late 1970s TV answer to Star Wars. I remember the TV series from the 70s, and it was kind of something as a kid you grew up on, you watched it, because it had Richard Hatch and Dirk Benedict, and if you're old as me, well, you'll know what I mean when I say Richard Hatch and Dirk Benedict. Anyway, by mixing in the paranoia of having the Cylons to be able to look like humans, which they didn't in the original TV series. It was interesting, deeply exploring the consequences of near extinction. The Sci-Fi Channel original series crossed genre lines with its appeal and had audiences on the edge of their seats with each new revelation in the story, where all had happened before and would happen again. Now, the prequel series, Caprica, promises even more philosophical exploration as the origin of the Cylon race, one of them anyway, unfolds among a cast of realistic and flawed human characters. So that's going to be good, I think. And what else happened this decade? The new Star Trek. Absolutely remarkable that an A-list producer like J.J. Abrams managed to reboot an iconic series like Star Trek without unintentionally sparking an incident of homegrown nuclear terrorism masterminded by a band of disgruntled Trekkies, or Trekkers. Aghast that someone dared to mess with the sacred timelines in such an epic fashion. Apparently did cause a bit of a meltdown. Some sex was added and action. to the famously cerebral franchise and creatively cherry-picking from more than 40 years of the canon that known as Star Trek. And the Twilight Saga begins its world domination. And that was this decade as well. Stephanie Meyer's books, which were written this decade. And there go the fireworks. We have got, everybody, welcome to 2010, the new decade. I didn't quite do the countdown, but we've got some fantastic fireworks happening. We've got one of the best shows in town. What do you think, Ross?
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, and to everybody out there. If you are listening, you're listening to Joy 94.9. It's a Sci-Fi and Scream, and I almost missed the countdown. In fact, I didn't do the countdown because time's just flying. Time is fleeting.
Yeah.
You know,
and we'll get
darkness
into the subject
lose
matter.
Control. And Sonia was getting into a...
You're just doing a little Rocky Horror there.
I was focusing.
She was.
And now it is 2010, people. So have you got a New Year's resolution?
Basically...
Or two or none?
I've got to say, I've been thinking about this, Sonia, and basically I was really touched
by... Goodness, can anyone hear us?
A really simple message that...
yes.
God, what's her name? Poe. You know the woman from MasterChef? The runner-up? Anyway, she's going to be the star of her own kitchen cooking show coming up.
Really?
And she just had a really interesting sign for an anti-discrimination sort of project. And it just had two words in it. And four words, sorry. And they were love more, hate less. That's what I've got to say about this year.
Okay, good. Excellent. Listen to those fireworks. Yes, it's so great.
It's really exciting.
Here we are.
I can sense the excitement from up here.
Oh, I'm sorry I didn't do the countdown, people. I was engrossed. I was grossed out, actually. Wow. It's a big come down, isn't it? Like, here we are. Look at that. I can see in the reflection that awesome, awesome display. They've really gone all out, haven't they?
Any New Year's resolutions from you, Sonia?
Oh, really? Me? Look, I gave up on resoluting a long time ago because I can never follow through.
Perhaps to have more of an open mind.
Oh, really? All right, we won't go there, girlfriend. Anyway, what was I saying? I was talking about Twilight and the world domination of Twilight. And don't look at me like that, Ross, because Twilight's okay. Now, Stephanie Meyer's books about vampirific repressed cult love consumes us all, first with her books and then with the film franchise. And Robert Pattinson or Taylor Lautner, obsessions amongst women of all ages occur, from tweenies to cougars and beyond. However, I predict Kristen Stewart to be the real winner for the teenies, our new decade. And now everyone wants to be a vampire. TV shows in the genre include Blade, the series. Although the series premiere had 2.5 million viewers in the US originally, it was the most watched original series premiere in history, apparently, at the time, and a number one show on cable. Apparently, that wasn't enough, not enough to keep it going. And on September the 28th, 2006, Jill Wagner, star of Blade, the series, announced that she was informed that there would be no second season of the show. The next day, Spike TV, the cable production company, announced in a press release that the show would not be picked up. What else do we have? We had The Vampire Diaries, which is still ongoing, Moonlight, which I believe is now finished, True Blood, of course, we played music from that earlier, and Split, which is an Israeli cable provider, Hot is ready to broadcast its own Bloodsucker theme series. It's already been broadcast, and the show Split follows a 15-year-old girl whose identity as half-vampire, half-human is revealed to her by a mysterious male classmate, a newcomer who turns out to be roughly 300 years his senior. The series, which features elaborate makeup and special effects, debuted in Israel on May 28th and was produced by the same team behind several of Israel's most popular primetime soap operas. There you go. And as with Twilight, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and virtually every other vampire-themed drama, Split appears to have a subtext only partly masked by all the pale skin and fangs. After the show's heroine learns her true identity, she is drawn into an ancient conflict between humans and vampires and eventually discovers she was born to put an end to the war. And that's from a report online on the Jewish Daily Forward, portraying the conflict heroine as actress Amit Farkash. And I'm sure she will do well elsewhere. Hey, we just got a message in. Thank you. It says, Happy New Year. Love you all. Wish you the best. 2010 to all. Thank you to that lovely listener. I'm just going to play a little message now. And then we'll come back and you're listening to Sonia and Ross on Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.